All right. Say something, Allie.
Like what?
Like that, so I could make sure I could hear you. Okay. This is our more than just me and Allie on the Anchor app. Got Marissa.
Hi.
We're going to talk about something that's on everyone's minds right now, obviously. We're going to talk about Downton Abbey.
The timely show.
Yeah. So, Allie, did you want to give us an intro or, start us off?
Sure.
Well, what do you want me to... Okay, so anyway, I have the website up for Highclere Castle, which is where they filmed Downton Abbey. So I just thought I'd give us a couple of facts about the estate. So the first written records of the estate date back to 749 AD, when an Anglo-Saxon king granted the estate to the bishops of Winchester, Bishop William of Wycombe, built a beautiful medieval palace and gardens on the park. So the palace was later rebuilt as Highclere Place House. Interesting that they call it a house, but whatever. In 1679, when it was purchased by Sir Robert Sawyer, Attorney General to Charles II and James II, and direct grandfather of the current Earl. So there you go. The family line goes all the way back to 1679. So, and actually this is related to the show, but during First World War, Highclere Castle was converted into a hospital for wounded soldiers run by the Countess. So.
Yeah, that is really cool. Hearing all that, I had no idea. It's a beautiful house.
Better than it sounds when we're recording.
Yeah, because I was about to say, I'm getting so much echoey feedback.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I don't know why.
It's fine.
We'll see what happens. We'll either have a nice chat about Downton Abbey that gets turned into a podcast, or we'll just have a nice chat about Downton Abbey that just for us.
You know, my favorite podcast, which no longer exists, RIP, they had the worst audio of any podcast I've ever listened to, and I still loved it. So, it's fine.
I was going to give some background on the show a little bit, since she gave us background on the castle. So, for those of you who don't know, Downton Abbey is a British period drama. Created by Julian Fellowes, and it was filmed with like Masterpiece, ITV, and PBS kind of all were like distributing it. It aired from
2000 and I just looked this up. 2011 to
2015, Allison. Yeah. That makes sense. And then we, of course, had the movie last year, which was great. But it's interesting because Julian Fellowes won an Oscar for his screenplay for Gosford Park. Have either of you seen that?
Yes.
You know what? I haven't.
I haven't either.
Absolutely. You should totally watch it. It's like crazy because you never exactly know what's happening. And I think that that's really the greatest part about the whole movie is because you don't know what's happening. And it's got such an amazing cast. Like, it's got Ryan Phillippe, it's got Maggie Smith, it's got Helen Mirren. It's incredible, the people he got in this movie.
All right, so we'll have to...
Yeah, adding it to my list. Lord knows I got the time right now, so let's do it.
And then...
They had upstairs, downstairs, that takes place in Edwardian England as well. But it takes place in a London house with the family living upstairs, and then of course their servants living downstairs. So you get that feeling from Downton Abbey. All right.
What?
What? Why do you think you guys like the show so much? We'll start with Marissa. What made you like the show so much?
I am a notorious sucker for a good period piece, and I think this is one of the best ones that's ever been made. I really liked, I never watched Upstairs Downstairs, and most of the period pieces that I like, because I'm like obsessed with royalty, have always been just about the nobility or the aristocracy. So to have a show that was about this aristocracy and also appealing to my socialist heart about people who, you know, are not aristocracy and who like have to surround them, like their lives are still run by them, I think it was a really fascinating dichotomy that I had never seen on TV before. And then I just think it's really well written. The characters are all great. The plot lines are never, they never felt contrived. A couple of them were a little like, eh. But for the most part, the plotting was good. The pacing was good. It looked like a movie every time you watched it. It was so well shot. It just had everything to me that's like a hallmark of like that peak TV era that it aired during. And I thought it was just really well done.
I think to me,
what about you, Allie?
It's like, for anyone who's a history kid, you're really interested in shows that are like fiction but are about history, and that do a really good job of actually telling history really the way it happened. And I think the Downton Abbey does a really great job of that. Is like, it tells the story of like this family, but it ties it to historic events, and so you see life like it was lived at the time of like great turmoil, you know, like at the time of World War One, at the time that like the Titanic sank, at the time that like, you know, England was going through like its great recession, and like people were fighting to keep their landed estates. And I think all of that was really well done.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Like, I hate it when there's like a character that doesn't really exist in history that gets inserted and it feels super inauthentic. This family felt, and these servants felt, like they could have been alive during Edwardian England, and I really appreciated that about it too.
Yeah, I concur.
I think that what's really cool about the show is it showed these people at a time of transition. And we don't, as historians, we always are talking about times of transition, but TV shows don't necessarily, like, they're going to show, you know, maybe big events only, or they're going to show, you know, a snapshot. But we were able to follow this family as it came up against different obstacles, and like how they were transitioning from this aristocracy to like maybe landed gentry that takes care. I mean, they always thought of themselves as taking care of the people who lived on their land, but like it was really shifting at this time, and the way they have to try to stay relevant was really interesting, because their world is not what it was, especially with World War One and what happens after that. And I think that they do a really good job of showing the transition in England at that time. So, and it's just, like you said, it's just absolutely like picture perfect movie style. Like the actors in it, the acting was so phenomenal, so high level. There was no one, regardless of what part you played, you had those scenes. Like there's so much to chew on in every scene, I think, for the actors.
I also love that the show starts out with one of those defining historical events, the Titanic. And the way that they loop it into the family storyline, like making it a personal crisis, I think was really cool. Because the Titanic, we think of it as this like huge event that occurred, and then all of a sudden, you don't really think about it as outside of just like the huge event, but to actually see how it affected this specific family was really cool too, I thought. Oh, the echo left.
Yeah.
My echo left from the...
What? Oh, yeah, I think it's because I muted the, not just my computer, but, like,
yeah, see,
the Zoom. I muted the Zoom.
Okay, sorry.
So, yeah, I don't know why that would affect things, but I guess it was. So, hopefully, whatever, we'll just have better audio for the rest of the episode. Okay. Well, let's talk about some of our favorite characters. I usually throw the question to you guys, so I'll start. So... And you can ask me questions about why I like these characters. And some of them you will agree with me, and some of them you will find me strange. But so some of my favorite characters from Upstairs are, I'll just list my like my top two are Edith and Violet. And of course, Isabel.
Is Isabel? Down.
Yeah. So Edith, yeah. Isabel, and Violet are probably my favorite of upstairs. So that would be Edith, and then Mrs. Crowley, and then Lady Grantham. And then downstairs, I love Thomas, and I love Bates.
Thomas is a hard no from
okay,
me.
I understand why you don't. No, okay, but I have a lot of feelings about Thomas, okay? And then as far as like, and then Anna. Anna's my ride or die. I love Anna. And then, of course, I have like soft feelings for a lot of other people, but those are three of my favorite downstairs characters.
Okay, I know okay, you can ask me like why Edith now. Standing, but I am also an Edith stan, so I support you 100% on that. I'll let Allie grill you about that one. Thomas, okay, I get it. This is a gay man who lives in Edwardian England. It's a fascinating story concept. I think it's super cool that they included it in the show. Why do you like him personally?
I don't like him as in like, I like why, like that he's in the show. I like the way they show his character development because he could have been an O'Brien.
I don't know. I think O'Brien develops the minute her nephew shows up because the whole time she's like, you know, very focused on like getting ahead, even though she's already at the top. She's focused on maintaining her status quo. But when her nephew arrives, she's focused on Alfred and what can I do to help Alfred and how can I help Alfred? And I think that that's a really nice addition because it softens her because she's not as mean and callous as her and, you know, Thomas used to be. She now becomes like this nice aunt who's like focused on helping her nephew.
I think I just never, spoiler alert, if you've not seen Downton Abbey, get out now. But I just think I never recovered.
She does who is Philip Alston. I'm not going to tell you.
I know she felt, but I just never recovered that. But anyway, so Thomas, I really like the way they take this character that could be like a throwaway, like side up downstairs character that's like unpleasant. And I like the way they build him out as time goes on. And he was an interesting way, like look into the war, I think too. Like obviously we had the home front with the hospital in the house, but I think Thomas's experiences, I just found him to be really interesting.
I don't know how he is like Thomas, though, when he goes out of his way to get shot in the hand. Like, he's suffering more than everybody else. Like, Matthew goes missing in action, and Thomas is just like, let me just raise my hand and get sent home.
Interesting.
Yeah.
No, but I think that we always hear stories about people who are heroic. Or we hear stories about even if they got in trouble with the military for leaving, they had like certain reasons that they didn't like the military action that was taking place. You don't always hear stories about people who are young and terrified and they're on the front lines of any conflict and they don't know necessarily what's going to happen to them. And they behave in not the best ways. Like I like that he already was like a dubious person. We knew that. And that like, it's not like the war made him better, right? I just think
I don't know. I guess for me, I would have liked, like, I like what you're saying, and I think that you're right. But I think the problem with Thomas being the one doing it is Thomas was already so unlikable that Thomas being the one do it instead of William, who's like 100% more likable. Like, the difference being that if William had done it versus Thomas doing it, like, I feel like it made me hate Thomas more that he was the one that did it instead of, you know, William or someone like really likable being the one who was like scared in the trenches.
I think the thing with Thomas that irritated me the most in the show was not that I agree with you 100% about the character development. I found him a fascinating character. All of that is 100% true. The redemption felt unearned at the end of the series.
Okay.
That he became their butler.
Okay.
That really irritated me because I could see someone like that, like sort of just surviving. Right? Like, and I think a lot of what Thomas's story is about someone who's really trying to survive. And I think the fact that he thrives is, to me, felt really unrealistic.
Right? Like, maybe if he had gone, and thrived at a different house, like, if he had, like, left and, like, took a job. You know, we don't see him again, but we know he went on to be a butler somewhere else because he learned so much and he did achieve things and he got better at his job, but maybe if he had left the household.
Right, and I think that
would have been more authentic.
The one criticism I've always had of Downton Abbey is that it's like this aristocracy savior complex where, like, they come in and they're like, this is a troubled man who's literally wrecked havoc on our house on multiple occasions, but we're going to promote him because we're good people. Like, I don't know, something about, like, it took me out of it. And, like, all of the things I loved about the show, about the realism to it, really, with Thomas, I always felt like I was like, this is, I don't know. I think that was my biggest thing with Thomas, was that redemption at the end. The way that it ended for him just felt.
I think it's a case where, like, when you think about the writers and the creators, that they had a soft spot for him and the character. Like, you know, it's like one of those things, like you said, it takes you out of it. So it's like when things, like, you would think that something else would happen, like maybe he'd go on to another house or just move on or do something else. And that, like, that he was kind of kept around because someone who's, like, creating this show likes him or, like, or feels some connection to the character or maybe helped create the character.
I mean,
so they don't
lose
that,
him. That
it kind of feels
true,
like that.
I, also, I think the actor did a fantastic job. And I do think the character is interesting. I thought the storyline, just the whole arc of it, the way it ended to me was very unsatisfying.
I don't know, to me, like, about, like, the thing you were saying about, like, the aristocracy, like, hero complex, I think maybe the way Downton Abbey works is that happens simply because they were in the position to do it. You know, like, you know what I mean? Like, they have this agency that, like, the downstairs people just don't have. And I think that that's why it happens.
Yeah, no, true. I totally agree with you. I think in some circumstances, them coming in, like when they helped Miss Patmore get her eyes fixed, like that to me, I could see an aristocratic family doing that for their cook. Like, I could totally see them doing that. But, and like, all the stuff with Mr. Carson, because he did so much for the family, anything they did for him, like Grantham repaying Bates for the Boer War by having him come, you know, like that all felt true to me. And even them helping Bates with his criminal shadiness, I also felt like I was like, okay, this totally makes sense to me. Like, you serve in a grand house, they're going to have your back. Like, I get that. But the Thomas stuff, I don't know. It was just something because I felt like so much of what he did touched them so intimately. And for them to give him that position of trust at the end just felt so, like, it took me out of it. It just did. And that's okay if you guys disagree, but that was my issue with Thomas, was the way it ended.
All right. Oh, who are some of your favorite characters,
Edith,
Marissa?
And I think we're going to have to defend that to Allie real soon. Edith became my favorite upstairs person. I definitely started with Sybil being my favorite upstairs person and went to Edith. I also like Mary. I thought all three of the sisters were great. I thought they were all great characters that sort of represented different types of womanhood for that period, and I enjoyed all of them. I also loved Isabel Crawley. She reminds me a lot of my mother, and I always really enjoyed that character. I also liked Violet a lot, and I did really like Matthew. Really, I was really devastated what happened to him, and I'm still not over it. And downstairs, I loved Anna. Anna's, like, pure heart of gold. I enjoyed Daisy as a character a lot. I thought that her rise through everything and her struggles with, like, class solidarity versus this, like, house that had treated her so well, I think was really fascinating. And I also really enjoyed Mrs. Hughes. I think she's fantastic. Yeah. So I named, like, half.
I think those are solid choices. Yeah. Well, Daisy's really interesting, too, because, so this is like a microcosm, right? This is supposed to represent this period of you know, transition, like we talked about, and aristocracy and their servants. And so it's everyone has kind of tropey traits that they have. And so Daisy is really fascinating because she's literally like a young teenage girl, very traditional, like servant in the kitchen. Like, you would never hear her, unless someone finds a journal from, if she could even read and write at that time, even if you were to find her journal in an archive somewhere, most likely, given the time period, she's going to be writing things like, this is how much carrots cost today, and she's going to write about the weather. Like, they didn't write, like, we get excited when we find these journals of people that write these, like, long things, and they're so epic and beautiful, but, like, not everyone's, a lot of people had daily planners, and they just wrote, you know, this is what happened today, and I learned to cook this, or whatever. So, you're not going to hear her voice all the time in history books or in movies and stuff. So, and I like what you said about, like, her development. Like, she starts out as this young servant girl. She really basically knows nothing. And then she has to, like, get in the routine of the house. And then she starts, you know, she meets a boy. They, you know, they connect. And then she starts getting an education. And then she gets left with, like, some land. And she has this connection outside the house. And she has to decide who she wants to be and where she wants to go.
Yeah, is that tornado siren?
Can you guys hear that?
They're testing
it. Yeah, tornado warning. It's for Saturday of the month.
No, I agree with Daisy. I always felt like was an underrated Downton Abbey character, because I think it's easy to write off a young girl from that period who, like you said, we would not be privy to their inner thoughts. And I think the way that they created this character and gave her thoughts and gave her a struggle that I think would have existed then for someone like that, I thought was super fascinating.
What I didn't like about Daisy was, I guess maybe this is more Thomas's fault than Daisy's fault, but like the way, like, I loved the way Mrs. Patmore basically adopted Daisy, and like that mother-daughter relationship that developed between them, I thought was so wholesome and like just so beautiful. The way like Mrs. Patmore was like, no, you're going to learn, you're going to do this, you're going to do this, like you're going to have more than I ever had. And I just loved that. But like Daisy got under my skin just with all the Thomas stuff. And this is, again, goes into like Thomas. He didn't have to do that. Like, he didn't have to, like, you know, flirt with Daisy and like rub it in William's face, but he did it. And it was like so malicious, and there was nothing in it for him to like get ahead. And I think that's like why I just struggle to like Thomas most of the time, is it's just, he's just outright malicious, and it's not even to get ahead. It's just to be malicious.
Yeah. I mean, and everything he did to your fave, Ray, Mr. Bates. Yeah. I mean, he was very,
come on, Ray, what are you doing?
For a long time.
Don't confuse. Don't confuse the issue, okay?
Thomas is one of your favorites. You have to defend him now.
I am in love with Mr. Bates. There's a difference.
I know.
I have defended. I think he's fascinating. I think he adds a lot of levels of drama to the show. Yes, unnecessarily so, but
I didn't really want to know. I was like,
we kept watching. We wanted to know.
When he left the house, I was like,
next. Like,
don't come back.
He's a really good character.
He's like, she's locked. She's locked.
If you think about it from a character perspective, it elicited a reaction from you guys. It's not like he was just like not a good character. Like, it adds to the drama of the show. The stupid alarm. Anyway, we don't need to talk about Thomas anymore. I'm sorry that I opened up such a can of worms.
Don't even know the character that develops, because Anna's development is the most beautiful and amazing thing in the whole show.
Anna's fucking amazing. I'm not going to argue about Anna. I'm just going to say, Marissa also knows this about me, that I'm always looking for LGBTQ characters in every show that I watch.
I guess.
And I have like a weird obsession with it.
Was
and
a super I don't know where it comes to from. The show, to but show I, a thing in that era.
Yeah. And I think too, like, I think they did it. So a lot of times when you have characters like that and they're not good people, it can be seen as like signaling that, like, you know, being gay is not good. And I think the way they did it in Downton Abbey was that those two, while his personal situation maybe affected how he viewed the world and his like ability to be nice to people because of where he came from, you know, you can't separate those things, but I don't think that they signaled in the show his being gay made him bad, which is a very fine line to run, because I don't think anyone watching the show would feel like that's what's coming across. What's coming across is that he's living in a difficult time to be a gay man where it's illegal and, you know, and dangerous. And that kind of affects his ability to interact with the rest of the world. And so I think they do a good, I think as far as shows go where they have gay characters who are not necessarily good, they don't overstep the line.
I think though that this just goes back to what Marissa said about his redemption not being redeemed, is I felt like for me it was like I felt like he should either be the villain or he should be the LGBTQ character of the show, because I agree with you 100% that all of those storylines about him being gay and having to hide it and not being able to be happy and, you know, being blackmailed by the Duke in like the first couple episodes of the show, all of those were incredibly important. But to me, it was too much because I wanted to like him, but he was being so shitty to everybody that I was like, why is everybody protecting his secret? You know what I mean? Because the way that the house protected Thomas was completely undeserved. And it's like, if he had been more like William, I could totally see the house being like, no, we're going to die for William. We don't care that he's gay. Like, we're going to protect him, like, because he's gay. But he's wonderful.
Right. I do think, though, I think it is kind of, I think because he's the only gay character in the show, it makes it more complicated. The only gay main character in the show. But I also think I vacillated between feeling the same way as you, Allie, but also sort of liking that he was a little bit more complicated. Like, I kind of enjoyed that they went there. And I don't think that, I think sometimes it felt that way where I was like, are they trying to do like a Disney villain thing to him? Like, trying to like code him as queer and then like make him, you know, evil? But I don't think that a lot. I think some of the fact of his gayness did make him resentful of certain things that he was free to do. And I think that that came out in some viciousness. So,
right.
I mean, I think that.
I think they did a good job, like, managing that line. And, you know, as far as, like, and as, like you said, like, in Disney when they code queerness as being evil. Like, they did that in the show. It was like a product. Like his negativity was a product of it, but it wasn't like.
But I do think, particularly in the early seasons, he was so cartoon villainy bad at times that it was a little. It was a little, like Allie said, a little bit like.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a little.
Yeah.
Dangerous.
Anyway, we don't have to talk about Thomas anymore. I think he's a really good character. We can talk about any other characters we want. Clearly, he
inspires a lot of thoughts in people. I will say the one thing I liked about Daisy's storyline too was how she ends up marrying William, and just like gets coerced into it, and then is a young widow. Mm. And I think young widowhood for women of that station, it ended up opening up a wealth of freedom for her that other women from that period did not have.
I liked the honesty of it too, like the way Mr. Mason was like, I know that you didn't love him the way that he loved you, but I don't care because he loved you, I love you, and so let's have this relationship.
Yeah, I thought that was very touching too. I agree. And I also think that the fact is that there were a lot of young widows in that period because of the Spanish flu and because of the war. So to show that in the show and to show a man who lost his child and reach out to the one that he had left was really, I really enjoyed that a lot. It was very.
Yeah. And like you said, if you became a widow, regardless of age, but, you know, young widowhood also doesn't get talked about, you know, when women lose their husbands when they're young, but you're right. They had so much more rights because they had been married and then lost their husband, and they had so much, and she had so much more opportunity and access.
I loved that they showed it for someone like Daisy, as opposed to like, Mary was a young widow too, but obviously that impacted her much differently than
Daisy. The difference is like, you know, that Daisy gets all this money and this power just from being married, whereas Mary only gets this money and this power because she had a boy, you know, she could have been Matthew's widow, and like without having that son that she delivered, like basically she delivered a cash cow because now she has power and she can do whatever she wants for the benefit of her son.
The faces. Okay, people can't see this on the podcast, but Marissa and I are just not happy about what Allie just said.
Before we get
stop. We can't talk over each other. Allie, I will allow, because you are talking to two Edith stans, I will allow you to make your case first.
Because she hasn't gotten to do
Well, I guess maybe he's technically a downstairs character. My overall favorite character is Branson. I love Tom Branson. He's my favorite. But and then second would probably be, I don't know if we classify him as an upstairs character or a downstairs character. So Branson. And then I love Mrs. Hughes. She just gives me life. Her snarky comments, her sass, her protectiveness of the staff. She's my everything. Like, if she was my boss, I would be like the happiest person. I'd be like, I'll go clean those rooms. I don't care. Mm-mm. But yeah. So those are my, and obviously I really liked Sybil, but you know, R.I.P. Sybil. So yeah. But okay, I will say for Edith, it's not so much. It's like I really like Mary, and I think that's probably where a lot of this comes from. And like and so that I will say that, and like I think that they were both really shitty to each other, which I didn't really care for, because it didn't really have to be competitive. And to me, Edith like struck the wrong bone immediately, because she was like, the minute we started the show, I didn't like Edith because of the way that when Patrick, their cousin, died, she was like, oh, I would have loved him if you'd given me a chance. It's just like, number one, you could have talked to your dad, because Lord Grantham is like the most reasonable human on earth. Or you could have talked to your mom, who's also the most reasonable human on earth. Like, I felt like they both had really great parents. Where, like, if she really loved Patrick, she could have been like, can I marry Patrick? And dad would have been like, I don't know, let me ask Mary. And then Mary would have been like, I don't care. Like, I don't care. Or Mary wouldn't have. But anyway.
Mary wouldn't.
What I really don't like about Edith was the way that she treated that family. I can't think of what their name is right now. It's blanking on me. But so I understand that she's in a really complicated position. 100%. I cannot imagine how horrible it would be to your child. However, you went into that with the knowledge that you were going to give up your child, okay? And then you brought your child back to the village and basically leaned on this family, the dad, basically, to take in. And then you act all shocked and surprised when the mom has a nervous breakdown about this child that you've brought into her house for her to love, for her to care about. And now you're upset because she cares and loves this child. And you're, like, acting all surprised that, like, she loves this child that you chose to bring into her house. And then the way that they get pushed out of the house, out of this farm that the family's had for, like, 100 years is just so frustrating to me. And to me, it showed no character development at all, because it was like she should be conscious of the choices that she made and care about the impact that these choices are going to have on other people. And to me, that was just what I couldn't stand. Was like just that, like I'm over the, but what just what?
I mean, the situation with the family that takes in her kid is really complicated. I agree that it doesn't always paint Edith in the best light, but I will say that I think that to me, that whole storyline was just, here's a fucked up system where if you have a kid out of wedlock, you are ruined. And then we expected those women then to give up their kids and never think about them again. And also part of that husband had a thing for Edith. And that wife knew. And that was a lot of it. That was a lot of it. I think that was a lot of it. Once again.
Yeah, I think I agree. I can see Allie shaking her head. I do think he had something for her. I also would like to back up to before all of that happened, because there's a lot of storyline that happens before Edith has her.
Which is
horrible. It's sort of funny. Like, I was watching it because I watched it once and or her, oh, some guy named Hitler. Boyfriend. And then I watched it the second time and I was like, what? What?
You and I watched that episode together, and he was like, I'm gonna go to Germany to get my divorce. And Ray's like, no,
I believe it. Ray was probably like, don't do it, like, get back to go back, just go back.
Yeah, I mean,
I was like, I know what's happening over there. Don't do it.
Situation where his wife is like an invalid, and like it was that was wild.
So I wanted to back up a little bit with early interactions we see between the sisters. And I feel Allie will disagree, but I'm just going to say, I think they're both extremely, I think you're correct in that, like, their fighting doesn't have to be like that as far as siblings goes, but we also only meet them, you know, later in life. We don't know what their childhood was like. Clearly, Edith has a chip on her shoulder continuing from childhood.
I mean, she's got,
and, like, she's the middle child. Sybil's real sweet. Yeah, she's clearly very intelligent. All three sisters are clearly very intelligent, but like Mary's the oldest, so she's, you know, she's got her own pressures as far as how she should marry someone and carry on the family line. She's clearly Lord Grantham. Well, Sybil might be.
I don't think that's fair to say that he lets her die. I think that the problem.
A favorite.
Well, it's just like what like the Dowager says is it's just like, you know, there's no guarantee that it would have worked. And I think honestly, he was just a man of his time, and you trust men who have a high station, and he didn't listen to the local doctor, even though he should have. And that's on him. And he has to live with that guilt.
I think you like him.
The only thing you don't like him. Okay. There's two things I don't like about him. I don't like when he fights with Mary and Branson about the future of the estate. It's like, they know more. They did their homework. Sit down and calm down. And then the second thing I don't like about him is when he kisses that maid. Because I'm just like, I feel like that came out of left field. I don't know what you were doing. I don't know what happened. I don't know why that happened. But you need to turn around and take that storyline somewhere else. Like,
Lord Tom is one of those characters that came about in this period of television, a lot like the president in Scandal. Well, I don't know if you guys ever watched that, but it was this white man that everyone surrounded and propped up, and of course it was more complicated than what it was with Fitz in Scandal, because it's not an elected position. This man was born into this position, so your ability to do anything about that is pretty limited. But I think you watch everyone around him, his mother, his wife saved their ass with their money from the United States. His mother basically still has to mother him. He can't even dress himself. I mean, it's insane.
The gambling.
You know, he's and then he loses all the money investing in some bullshit railroad. I mean, Lord Grantham in a lot of ways is this like sensible gentleman, and he has that like chivalry and that like, and there's something very appealing about that.
It's but a veneer.
I also think that he fucked up in a lot of ways,
you know, though. But I think that's what Lord Grantham is, though, is he's that classic representation of that aristocratic person. And like you said, he's very vanilla. He's the product of, and that's why I think we have these great diverse characters, his three daughters, his wife, his mom, you know, Mrs. Crawley. You fill it with these strong women because he has to be vanilla, because that stereotype is vanilla. Oh, so then you need all these diverse women to pick up the slack.
I mean, I agree with you. I think the portrayal of him as the emperor has no clothes. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I mean, because I think there were a lot of men in his station that were exactly the same. I think Lord Grantham inadvertently pitted his children against each other, particularly Edith and Mary, because of the way he treated them both. And I have mad respect for Mary. I think Mary took her position as the oldest very seriously, and I think she really cared about the integrity of that estate. But I think if you look at the way that they talk about Edith, it's very clear that Edith was not given the same attention as Mary, and Sybil had the sweetest temperament.
You know, though, I would say that, like, I mean, and I'm sure you guys can both say this because you both have siblings. You have different relationships with each of your parents, and I think that Lord Grantham had a better relationship with Mary just because I think Mary related to the position he was in more, because Edith was like, I'm the second daughter. Yes. I'm none of this is ever going to be mine. And I think that, to me, like, that was where I felt like, you know, and maybe, like, they hinted it and I missed it, but I really felt like that was somewhere where Cora could have picked up a lot of the slack, is doing more stuff with Edith and going out of her way to Edith for special. And honestly, I think maybe that's just a product of Cora not having as much screen time as, like, Lord Grantham. But, like, to me, that was, like, an area where I felt like Cora and Edith were a lot alike. Like, in the way that, like, when Cora finds out she has, like, a daughter, Cora's like, she's coming to this house. I felt like Cora should have been like that a lot earlier for Edith. And to me, that was an area where the show left us hanging.
Yeah, I think when we're talking about the veneer that Lord Grantham has, that Cora, as this American heiress who you know, came over, also kind of has this, like, aloofness about her. Like, you can see her caring for her family and her house and things like that, but she's also was also raised with, like, lots, everything given to her and the best education and the best things, and she married this man, and, you know, you can tell she loves him and stuff, but, like, even though she's obviously, you know, she's got three grown daughters, she's been in England for years and years, she's still seen as, like, this outsider. So she keeps this, like, aloofness. And, like, I've heard from people that raised that, like, their parents are from somewhere else and then they raise them here, or, like, they are raising their children in another country. Like, you don't always, especially, like, you know, you don't always feel as connected to them because, like, they're of that country you're in, whereas they're not as of you as much because they're not from where you're from. They're British as opposed to American in this case, or whatever. So I think that there can be, I think that that separates Cora from her daughters a little bit, that they're almost more their father's children because that's where they grew up in England, as opposed to their mother's children. And that causes the divide you see with Cora with Mary, Cora with Edith. And then again, like you said, like, Sybil serves as, like, sweet and friendly and very intelligent, very fierce, but, like, everyone just kind of likes Sybil. And then I'm not trying to detract from her. But I also think, I won't speak for anyone else, because I know Marissa's a big fan of Edith, and we've talked about her a lot. But I also think I just really connected with Edith's storyline being a perpetually single woman who has a lot of opinions. And you know, she goes on to write for newspapers and things and start a newspaper. And so she shares her opinions and she's not afraid to. And she grows into that. She doesn't start there because obviously she kind of still kowtows to Mary early on. But so I think I really related to Edith of, like, she wanted it all. And she was living in a society that said, if you're a woman like this, you can't have that. And those rules apply to Mary too, but, like, as we've already discussed, she took her position very seriously as the first daughter. She, you know, kind of, like, played her role maybe a little better than Edith was capable of. And I just, that's why I connected to Edith. And I also think, so we were talking about Thomas earlier and that maybe someone on the writing staff just, like, had a soft spot for Thomas, so they kept him around, right? I think with Edith, they put Mary through the ringer, and it's not cool when the fucking car accident happens. Okay. Mary gets put through the ringer too, but Edith consistently, you think that she's going to, like, get what she wants. And then it gets taken away from her in brutal ways, time and time and time and time again. And it's not because the actors work on another show.
She gets left at the altar. Yeah. And I think you can read the pilot. I actually recently rewatched the pilot, and I think you can read it differently. Like, you could say maybe she just wanted to marry Patrick because he was the heir, and that would give her, like, something, like, as the second daughter, like, over Mary. It would give her that status that I think Edith always does in some way crave. And I think it's status more to have her own life as opposed to status, like, to get out from being in this position as the second Crawley daughter. But I also think, like, it's possible that she had sincere feelings for him. You know? I think that, so if you add that, you have your first love potentially dying in a horrific shipwreck. Then you have a man leave you at the altar. You have a child out of wedlock because your man goes to get a divorce in Germany as the Nazis were rising in power. And then Mary outs the fact that she has this child to the man that she falls in love with. And finally, someone gives Edith a fucking break and she gets to marry this guy. you know. It is.
And but then it's just it's the best fucking
that they started the series where Mary so is definitely more status obsessed than Edith. And Edith ends up becoming a duchess, and Mary ends up married to a race car driver.
She's not a duchess. She's a marchioness. Really cool, okay, let's get it straight. She's not a duchess.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, she's the heiress. I'm sorry. She's the heiress to a dukedom. She will be a duchess one day.
I don't know. I guess to me, it's just I felt like I liked that Edith was like, I'm going to be a writer, and I liked that, and I liked that she became a publisher then. And then to me, for her to, like, I love Bertie. I think he's great. But then for him to, like, inherit the title and her to outrank Mary, to me, felt like bringing Edith back into a world that she just spent the last two seasons getting away from. And then to me, it was like, so now is she going to give up her career? Like, is she not going to be a publisher anymore? Is she not going to be doing all of these things that she's, you know, fought her family and worked so hard to get? Is she just going to give these up now? And I didn't like that. Like, I thought that was really meh to me.
I kind of felt, my feeling of it at the end there was that they kind of, Grantham, not Mary and Tom with their thoughts about their estate, but Grantham represents the old guard that allowed this whole system, you know, in addition to everything mm-hmm. else happening around them, to kind of crumble and like couldn't do much about it and like wasn't really willing to innovate. And I see Edith's marriage to the future Duke as a representation of the new aristocracy who is going to take care of these properties. They're going to innovate the same way that Mary and Tom planned for their estate and things like that. But like that they represented like this new wave of people, kind of like we kind of see Will and Kate today. And yeah. as far as like the way, and you know, Harry and Meghan to a different level, different degree, but like, we're not going to, you know, kowtow to what you think we should be doing. We're going to give to these charities. We're going to speak out on these issues. We're going to, you know, do these things, you know, like my mother Diana did, you know, like I think they kind of represent that. So I don't think that she necessarily would give up what she was doing. I think there's a possibility that she would maintain a hand on that publishing.
I didn't think okay. I know that their storyline was pregnant and he had to go help the wayward Prince of Wales, who of course completely fucks everything up
it's
later
sort
in history.
Just like, but, it's I like mean, they it's like she like agrees to marry Bertie, or like he comes to the publishing house and they work all night to put out that edition and then they never talk about it again. Sort of like it, and it's like those are the questions I had, because I too love that about Edith. I was like, oh, she's the working woman, and then they never mention it. And I'm like, so did she give it up? Because then why did you even have that be a story if she was gonna give it all up?
Maybe we're supposed to take from the fact that he helped her with that issue that
well, isn't there a date though, Reed or North? Right, but like if she's like, you know, if the king's visiting, she has to be there. Sure, or if like somebody else is visiting, she has to be there. Like, they're not just going to live separately. Otherwise, what's the point in marrying someone you love? Why don't you just marry someone you can tolerate if you're going to spend all your time apart?
I mean, I do think though, with a lot of aristocratic marriages, like the men often had to go do other things and they weren't always at their country estate. And I think at that period in history, it would not be unheard of for her to do the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an interesting point. I agree. Right. I would have liked more.
So I'll have to tweet Julian Fellows and be like, so we got quick question. Did she give up the publishing industry or no? Is she still doing that? Just quick question.
Quick question.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Inquiring minds want to know. I just thought of some other characters I want quick thoughts on. So we have Rose, who's their young cousin. And what'd you guys think about her addition to the show? I thought it was like fun and interesting, and like it showed these like it's interesting. Kinship ties in aristocracy are fascinating because a lot of people I mean, obviously they get the most studied in history because we have records of those people, of who was born to who and things like that. But a lot of times, like, most TV shows and stuff show, like, kinship ties between, like, you know, working class, normal people. And, like, the kinship doesn't, like, when you look at Mary and Edith, like, there's no love lost between the two of them, really. Even by the time the movie comes around, maybe they're a little nicer to each other, but not really. So I found, like, having Rose to show that extended kinship. And then we get the American family as well in a couple episodes.
I guess I would say like that. I think that, you know, after Sybil dies, I wouldn't say that they're necessarily nicer to each other.
Yeah.
But I would say they care a lot more about each other. Like, they might be like, you know, I'm still going to treat you like shit, but if you need me, I'm going to be there. And honestly, like, if that's, you know, sometimes sibling relationships are like that, you know, like, I'm going to treat you like shit. But if you're dying in the hospital or you need anything, I will be right there in like 10 seconds. And honestly, I think that that's important to their relationship, is just that Sybil does bond them to each other.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and I think bringing Rose in as their cousin was also a way to, like, because Edith and Mary were older and Sybil, you know, leaves the life basically to marry Tom and stuff like that. We never got to see, like, the true aristocracy of this family, really, until you have Rose and she has her coming out party. I really liked that
they, like, brought a little of the modern stuff back, the progressive woman stuff back into it. But you still had someone like Rose who lived in that world and really did want to live in that world still. But also make changes within it. I thought that that was really, whereas Sybil, like you said, just ups and leaves for love. And yeah, so I enjoyed her addition to the show a lot.
Yeah, I think she's fun. What about I wish I knew more about Robert's sister Rosamond, who helps Edith with her baby problems.
She married well. What I think did she, like, do twice
all day in London.
So she's got like a load of money.
Servants
twice. And that's why that one guy is like trying to like catch Rosamond, like the guy who's like sleeping with her, like maid or whatever,
right?
Because he needs her money.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, did she?
She doesn't. She can like up with Edith and like take her. Like, I think though, like, she does a really nice job of being there for all of them. She's there for Mary, like, she's there for Edith. I think she doesn't come until after we lose Sybil, but or like she's there, but not really there, you know.
Yeah, I thought that she was fascinating, and I wish we had known more about her, because I agree with you. Like, what did she do in London? Was she just like a socialite? Did she just go about town and just meet with all of these other rich, idle rich people? But I also felt like she was this really cool, like the really cool maiden aunt, you know, like the one where, you know, if you have a problem, you go to her. She's like glamorous and lives in the city. Like, I thought that she was a really cool character, and I wish that you could have a spinoff show about her.
I really like, you know, I think Violet gets a lot of negative attention, but I think she just proves to be one of the most evolving characters throughout like the whole show. Just because, like, you know, everyone's always like, oh, grandma would never allow it. Like, and then Sybil's like, thank you for sending the money, whoever did. And they're like, well, I didn't send the money. And then Violet's was like, I sent the money. Family takes care of family. And everyone's like, you sent the money? What? And then, like, when Edith has to like go away with Rosamond, grandma's like, no, I'm gonna pay for it, because you don't want to be indebted to Rosamond. Like, I just think that, like, she's so shocking, like, the whole time, just because these are like things that she, you know, her whole life has trained her to not be okay with these things. But then, like, she proves, like, you know, I'm more than just this archetype of like this old school grandma.
Yeah, well, she's like the best grandma, because like that's literally what grandmas are like, you know, people talk about their grandma, like, they, she just did this for me, like people that have grandparents and stuff, that she's badass. She's, and Maggie Smith is just perfect. And I love the interplay between her and Isabel. I love their friendship.
And you get a sense of like Violet's like wild youth a little bit, and like why she's not exactly this old stick in the mud, but actually has like this vibrancy in this life that she had led before she became the Countess of Grantham. I thought that
I think my favorite episode between the two of them is when Isabel marries that guy, and Violet's all like trying to be chill about it, but she's actually really upset because she doesn't want to lose her buddy, and she's just like,
yeah.
She's like, no, I don't care. And then they're all like, we're pretty sure you care. And she's like, I don't care.
I know, I liked that too. I will say, I liked that. I enjoyed their dynamic a lot. Their friendship was awesome. And they're like, they were like frenemies, and then they became like true like friends. And it was really, that was fun. But I hated that she married that guy. I shipped her with Clarkston so bad, and I wanted it to happen so bad. But I did like Violet's reaction to her marriage. I agree with you, Allie. I just had to throw in my shit.
Honestly, I think it would have been really nice, because I do like Clarkston a lot too. No, like, yeah. I didn't really like that, like the Lord, whatever his name is, that she marries. But I think the thing is like, I think it follows the Downton Abbey storyline for her to not be aristocracy. They go out of their way to tell her she's not aristocracy, and then by the end of the show, she's aristocracy. I think it was too easy of a story for the people. Like, if you knew the way Downton Abbey worked, you're like, yeah, she's going to marry that guy. Like, it's going to happen.
Right. No, it was like a slow-moving train wreck. Like, I was like, she's going to marry him, and I'm going to be really sad. My one ship that I never thought in a million years would happen was Hughes and Carson, and it did happen, and I thought it was great. That's the most beautiful being like, there's something here, ever. There's something here. There's, and then for the show to do it was shocking.
It was a real burn.
Yeah. Well, it was so sweet.
You know, like, honestly, like when they walk in the water, if you didn't know that they were going to get together, you haven't been watching Downton Abbey long enough. Like, the minute they were like holding hands in the water, I was like, okay, so they're basically going to get married. That's fine. Whatever. It's cool. Whatever.
And for people like them to find happiness later in life, like, that was really moving. And I loved it. I loved everything about Carson and Hughes and the different worlds they represent. Like, Hughes was this no-nonsense housekeeper who did her job well, but didn't have this, like, hero worship of the family. Where Carson would literally lay down and die for every single one of them. And would just smile on his face. Yeah, like, and the fact that they came together despite that, it shows that, like, these people still have lives outside of them.
You know, go ahead. Yeah.
Right. No, I loved his development. I loved Carson's development and his and Hughes and Carson. It's literally the most beautiful relationship. It's just so sweet. Like, I mean, Anna and Bates have a very special place in my heart.
Yeah, I love
don't you people had to struggle so much to get together than those two? Like, you can say Mary and Matthew struggled, but not to that extent. Like, not that bad.
No, Mary and Matthew struggled because they couldn't make up that they themselves created their own struggle. Now, Bates and Anna, the whole world was against them. Yeah. Also, question. Bates killed Anna's rapist, right?
I mean, like, I don't think so. That woman confessed to pushing him in after she assaulted him, too.
She did.
I don't know. To me, I don't think he did. But
Bates did it.
I know she confessed. I don't think he did it.
I don't know. I guess if he did it, why did this woman claim to do it? Is my question.
She got pressured.
I'm not buying it. I think she did it, but whatever.
If you're going to be an aristocratic family and have loyalty to your servants, because let's not forget. Then you're gonna fucking.
It just doesn't seem like something they would do. Like, they would, if they wouldn't pressure someone who is innocent to take the fall for something they didn't do. That doesn't seem like what they would do. They would pressure someone who, if they did it, to come forward and admit that they did it. But I don't think they would pressure someone who was innocent to confessing to it.
Well, if it wasn't him, he definitely went there intentionally.
Well, I think he meant to do it. I'm not saying that. The same thing, he actually did it.
Oh my god. Yeah, Bates gets accused of murder twice, right? In the
He's a busy yeah, servant. Okay, that's He's a busy wife. Servant.
Yeah.
I love him so much, and I'm surprised
yeah, why don't you just tell us.
Talk about him.
Come on.
I like that he is... I think that he's complicated, and I don't think they fully explore how complicated mm-hmm. he is as a man. I think his relationship to Lord Grantham is really interesting, and like their like loyalty to one another fascinates me. And there's a darkness to him that I find exceedingly attractive. And something about that limp. I don't know, guys. I would do anything for Mr. Bates, basically.
People can't see Allie and I's faces right now, but we are cracking the fuck up. So that's...
I think that the actor plays the I clearly find the actor attractive.
Well, I want you to know that Julian Fellowes wrote that role for that actor. So
that makes sense. Perfection. He plays it really well.
Yeah, he fucking lives it up. I love everything.
Have you watched North and South yet?
He's
you can't.
Dude, he's in that North and South.
I have not.
Oh, I have.
Guys,
yeah.
You need to meet Richard Armitage and fall in love with him. But also, Brendan Coyle isn't that, so it's only for Ray too.
He's so him. Good. I know Richard Armitage. He's good.
He was in the Hobbit movies, but I don't know if that's
no, that's gotta be where I know it from. Yeah, no, that okay. We don't have to talk about Richard.
We can. We don't have to.
He's like dark hair and dark.
Got those piercing eyes.
Dark beard.
Strong,
yeah,
beard.
Basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I told you we could talk about him if you wanted to. Okay, what did you guys think of like the coming full circle of the ending of the show where Anna ends up in Mary's bed and then Mary ends up taking care of Anna? Did you guys like that or did you think it was weird?
I
thought like it was like the true evolution of Mary's character.
I loved it.
That like, you know, she starts as like this rigid aristocrat and then at the end of the show she's delivering her maid's baby in her bed. In her room, she's like,
I know, it's so cool. Yeah,
I fucking love Anna. Anna's perfect in joy and light and all things. And what happens to her is truly terrible. And whoever killed the guy, fine, I don't care. But yeah, I love her relationship to Mary because Anna is so sweet and good. And like you said, Mary can be kind of stiff and like harsh seeming and. If you watch the show, you know that it's not always like that. But, like, Anna sees Mary for her best self and is able to be her. And, like, I don't think you could be someone's, you know, maid servant that worked that closely with them, dressing them and doing their hair and stuff, if you didn't believe in them as a person. And so I do love that Mary ends up switching kind of roles with Anna and taking care of her.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I was just
go ahead,
Marissa. Anna and Mary were forged in the fire when they snuck that dead man out of Mary's bed. I mean, that was, I think at that point, it's like, they're sisters. They're tied now. That's how that goes. I mean, and I loved the relationship between the two of them because there was loyalty there on both sides. And it was one of the better relationships in the show.
You know, though, I like the mirror between Anna and Mary and then Bates and, like, Lord Grantham, as I felt like that was really interesting. It's just because, and, you know, I really like that not only Anna softened Mary, but I loved the relationship that developed between Branson and Mary. Like, just, like, they're, like, the way that they became, like, BFFs at the beginning, Mary was, like, the chauffeur, and then at, like, the end of the show, she's just, like, I cannot imagine my life without you. Like, I just felt like that was so great.
Yeah.
No, Mary has a great arc. I think Mary arguably has one of the stronger arcs in the series, if not the best. Yeah.
Right. Like, if it wasn't such a good, well-written ensemble show, you could almost argue that the show's
Yeah, well, Mary. Absolutely. I think so.
Honestly, I would say that if you ask me who the show is about, I would say Mary and Anna and then probably Lord Grantham.
I would say Mary, Anna, and I think, yeah, I would honestly say Mary and Anna, to be honest. And maybe, like, Edith.
Edith or Tom would be up there.
I definitely think Branson evolves, so, like, he would be, like, a good choice, because his arc, like, and I like the way that he, you know, goes to the U.S., because he's like, no, I want to start a life. I don't want to be part of this life. And then he, like, comes back, and he's like, this is my family. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Oh, Tom is fascinating because he really, it's just like what people are talking about right now. Like, people are having conversations with people that they're not normally having conversations with, or that they're not normally coming into contact with. And so it goes both ways for, like, Tom and Lord Grantham have to, like, see each other. They can't pass each other. They need to, like, come together. And same with Mary. And I think it's a struggle for them, the aristocrats, but it's also, like, they do a good job of showing that it's a struggle for Tom to see them as people, too. A lesser show would have
just made it about the aristocrats accepting this, like, wayward Irish socialist into their family, whereas this show is about also an Irish socialist accepting that his family, these people that, you know, that he loves, are so different than him. I think Tom's a fantastic character.
Plus, he's gorgeous. Yeah.
He's great. Oh, actor. So
yeah, he's so
he was
cute.
In Rome, that show Rome that was short-lived, and he was real freaking adorable in that too. Of course, he falls for a woman above him. That's
that's just who his he is. Type.
Yeah. No, Alan.
I liked it.
So, how did you guys feel about the movie?
A+, loved it.
Yeah, it was literally like I don't think anyone who's major fans of Downton Abbey, which is interesting that it's the three of us talking about it, because I think even though we know that lots of people our age enjoyed it, like, I think it's a lot of people assume it's older women who really loved the show, but we were all major fans.
We know
it was basically fan.
You know, wait, a lot of people think like that men don't like it, but like Mike watched the last few seasons of Downton Abbey, and we went to the movie together, and he liked it, so. Yeah.
My dad loves it. Yeah, my dad loved it. And he doesn't always like period pieces, but he really liked it. And he doesn't like Victoria, that show that's on PBS, even though they try to do the upstairs downstairs thing. My dad hates that show, but he loved Downton Abbey.
I think that Downton Abbey does a great job of, like, incorporating things that everybody cares about, you know, like with the war stuff. Like, the three of us are probably like, can we have less battlefields, please? Please? Please. Or like the race car scenes, like, we're just like, I don't care.
There was where I was like, okay, this is not me. Like, and I think World War One is not talked about as enough because it's fascinating, but America doesn't talk about that war except minutes saved it at the end, right? Yeah. Like, you know, go patriotism. But I liked watching World War One from that perspective. Because I think that in the United States, our education, unless you do what you two have done, which is go on and get masters, I think our education isn't focused enough on the whole world view of World War I.
To be honest, even within, like, going on to, like, your further degree, and I'm sure Ray can speak to this too, unless it's, like, your subject area, and this is something I don't really like about, like, history, is I think that they want you so much to focus in on one thing that, like, you miss everything. It's like, only ask me about, you know, the history of nursing. Only ask me about this one really specific topic. You can't ask me about anything else. Just this one really specific topic. Which isn't to say I expect everybody to have knowledge in everything. I'm just saying I think we could be benefited by, like, you know, like for Ray, like if German history is like focus, you should have another complementary focus, I guess is what I'm saying. You can relate.
Yeah, I can relate totally. It's like you went to law. I mean, we have to do generalized. We don't have to get into it, but I had to do generalized education. But after law school, it's like I can get you out of jail, but I can't tell you about your home, your contract with your mortgage company. I don't know anything about that.
That's the thing that people, like, think is, like, I got asked, like, people like to ask me the most random crap. Like, someone was like, do you know, like, I know, I heard you know about history. And I was just like, I study history. Yeah. And they're like, do you know where this word comes from? And I'm like, no, I'm sorry. I don't know why people in Britain call the bathroom the loo. I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't study British history. I have no idea. Like, I'm very sorry. I'm like, please don't talk to me ever again.
No.
That's hilarious.
I liked that the show incorporated World War I. I mean, it had to based on the period it took place in, but I like that they went all in on it. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do it.
Oh, God, know, guys, you make me want to rewatch it.
I rewatched a couple episodes. They had a marathon on and I caught a few
episodes. It's all in Prime.
But, yeah. I mean, it's still, I think, one of the better period pieces that have ever been put on TV. I think it's, if not the best.
How's that new
Belgrade?
One?
Belgrade? Yeah, I only watched
it's a Julian Fellowes show. It's going to be good.
Yeah, it's good. It definitely has a similar vibe to Downton, but it takes place 100 years before. So, you know, it's more focused on like a singular family. Like, which this show is, which Downton is too, but like it really is just about the family. These two families. So, it's interesting.
I just want to add that Downton Abbey was the most expensive TV show ever. It was really? £1 million an episode to make.
Yeah, I remember thinking about that. That surprised me.
Mm-hmm. It was more expensive than Game of Thrones. Oh my God.
£1 million an episode.
That's insane. I mean, and they really do. They are like mini movies.
Yeah. And what? This is unrelated, but kind of. Speaking of mini movies, I was kind of semi-rewatching Gilmore Girls, and I think that's the success of that show, too, is, like, each episode feels like a mini movie. Like, there's, like, this, you know, it starts, and then there's, like, something that happens, and then it leads to a conflict, and then it plateaus, and then there might be a spike, and then there's a resolution, and then the next episode is, like, it's, you know, formulaic, but it feels like a movie, and the way they shoot that, I was thinking more about production quality and like really the way they shoot Gilmore Girls is actually pretty impressive.
Budget, I'm sure
given
they,
when it was made and like, I just have two questions. One, okay, they're all related. One, I would really love if Julian Fellowes would do. It doesn't have to relate back to Downton Abbey, but that'd be really nice. But I'd really like to see like an American Heiress like show done by Julian Fellowes, because I really don't think anyone else can do it well enough. But like where these showing how these British men are coming over to America to marry these heiresses and like,
well, they
I'd be really happy to know.
They like, went over is, there, like the American like. Women went over there. So even and if that's more also, in his wheelhouse than doing like them coming to, like if he's like he could do that easily. So
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Either way. And also, what do we, I mean, I have a feeling we're going to be, unless they've already been filmed, we're going to have to wait a long time for either a continued season of any period piece or like new period pieces, because you can't film a period piece.
No, you can't do like, soundstages socially and stuff, distanced. Yeah. I, you guys should watch the period piece that's come out recently. It's The Great on Hulu. Not accurate, but it's fun.
Yeah,
and it's really.
I don't really like fun period pieces. I don't like that. Don't mess with the books. Like
I think they change a lot about Russian history, but it's still they still keep a lot of like what ends up happening, like the big arc of it.
Well, you guys need to watch Gosford Park, and you need to watch North and South. That's your homework assignment.
I will do that. And I mean, I'm going to try to hunt down a way to watch Belgravia without paying out my ass for it. Because you can watch the first two episodes on Amazon Prime for free, but after that, it's difficult, so.
Wait, like you have to have Prime or like you have to like pay for it?
That sucks.
Well, if you have Prime, you can watch the first two episodes for free. But even if you have Prime after that,
well, who made it?
Epic.
That's annoying.
Yeah, done with having to get other streaming. I want
just read the book. Just be like, I'll figure out what happens. I'll just read the book. So.
Yeah, I might. But they got, of course, fantastic actors. It's beautifully set. It's
that's
really
good.
It's a Julian. Yeah.
I highly recommend World on Fire, which is about World War II, the beginning stages, and it follows different people from England and Germany and France and their experiences with as the war is like ramping up and starting. And Poland, it also includes some Polish people, and it's really, really well done. And every episode was like a movie, and I wanted it to be like twice as long every time I watched it. I watched it with my mother. It's from PBS, so you can get it pretty easily. World on Fire is really good.
If you want a book about Americans coming to Britain to marry men, there is a book called
Heiress.
Yeah, it's good. You'd like it, Ray. Yeah, yeah. And they literally bill it to you if you like Downton Abbey. So
true. I think I've read some of Julian Fellowes, because he's put out a couple books besides Belgravia, and his books are all really good. So it's like watching. It's like watching any of his shows, reading his books. So,
cool. I'm free, so any of those.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah.